there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fan Side, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm going to be in Big Sean's future as soon as he's tall enough to ride this ride and gets over his attraction to women, Jarrett Hill.
Wow. My God, have mercy on all of us who just had to witness that. Those of us in the present and those of you listening in the future. But my God.
What's funny is I wrote that months ago and I was like, oh, it works now. So get life.
Wow. Okay. And I am entertainment journalist, editor, and author Travell Anderson. Welcome,
hey, author.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful folks. Coming up on the show, we are going to get into the man, the myth, the mustache, Stephen Harvey.
First of all, stop. You cannot take that from me because I wrote that. I wrote that.
You did. But first, we're going to get into a Pass the Popcorn. This is our segment where we talk about some of the things, you know, unfolded on the social medias. And I wanted to talk about this new film that all of the girls are talking about. And by all of the girls are talking, I just mean it was number one on Netflix this weekend. Okay, over the weekend, Tyler Perry's latest foray into doing whatever the hell he wants because he can debuted on Netflix in the form of a Madea Homecoming, which marks the 12th film in the Madea cinematic universe, which is a term that I strongly, strongly believe I coined back in the day at the LA Times, but now everybody's using it in all of their reporting about Tyler Perry. I just want to say I'm fairly sure I did it first, okay? Anyway.
The erasure of trans excellence is just disgusting.
I hate you.
Honey, the way they appropriate from our people, I just cannot.
Okay. Okay, so the film, A Madea Homecoming, is a whole lot of foolishness, but at its center is Brandon Black's character, who is the first openly gay character ever in a Madea film. I roll my eyes very strongly here.
I was going to say, and the irony is thick.
Very strongly. And it's about his family. They're all coming down to Madea's house for his graduation from college. This is all, oh, side note, spoiler alert.
I was going to say, are you going to put that
okay. So now, this is also supposed to be major, I guess, because the film also features in a crossover of sorts, Agnes Brown, who is like Ireland's Madea. It's this white man who's been playing this old, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire-esque woman in a comedic way for, you know, a decade or so. So shout out to all the folks in the Europe listening. All right. Hold on tight, okay?
Well, keep around the world, really.
Yes. Okay, so Agnes is the great aunt of the roommate of Brandon Black's character, who we're led to believe for the majority of the film, for half of the film, is Brandon's boyfriend. But somehow he really fucking Brandon's mama?
I mean, what?
Now, come on now. Okay, so I spoke about the film on Pop Culture Happy Hour. I believe the episode is out today as you all are listening, so you can check that out. I'm also going to be on our Maximum Fun Sister Brethren Sibling Podcast, Maximum Film. So if you want an extended conversation about what I think and some other voices think about this film, you can check out both of those, okay? Maximum Film and then Pop Culture Happy Hour. Maximum Film will come out tomorrow on Friday if you're listening to this on Thursday. Anyway, okay, so I've been doing a lot of talking about this movie is my point. And so I wanted to get Jared's thoughts because I know you also watched it this weekend. Did it give? Was it giving, as the kids say?
It gave something. This was one of those movies where I was like, I need to talk to somebody about this right now. And you hadn't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. And so I was like trying to find someone to talk to, because I will tell you, the idea that we're giving a spoiler alert just feels, girl.
You don't think nobody's watching?
It's not even that no one's watching, because clearly people were watching. But like, it just felt very much like a Tyler Perry storyline. No tea. I mean, any appropriate shade, right? We've done a whole episode about the creative happening over at Tyler Perry Studios.
Or lack thereof.
You didn't have to do that.
I didn't, but I did. I've already talked at length about my thoughts about this man on all these other shows, but I couldn't curse. You know, I couldn't really give it because it's an NPR audience, you know?
Yeah.
You know? So y'all got to get this is the unfiltered version, baby.
Yeah, the NPR shows, I'm about to do a pop culture happy hour about Bel Air, and I'm like, and I can't cuss? Fuck. Okay. So the Tyler Perry film, it was, to be very honest with you, I was doing some work on Saturday and it was something that I could put on in the background without having to like pay close attention because you never really have to like be focused. By the time we got to the mama and the roommate, I was like, baby, we jumped the shark about 3 minutes ago in this scene that was already too long. It was challenging for me. It was really challenging because I had a hard time believing that Madea would then go tell the mom to go be with this young man.
This 26-year-old, yes.
That she's dating that we all believe was fucking her son. Like, it just did not. It didn't curl all the way over for me. It didn't happen in the way that I needed it to.
One of the questions that I offered on Pop Culture Happy Hour, in a way, was about, like, this movie feels like Madea has not progressed in the 12 films that we've seen her in. Even in attempts to modernize, to reflect the times, right? The caricature of the Black Lives Matter, you know, defund the police effort, right? The foolish discussions about Black police in our communities, the weird racial efforts across, you know, the Irish language barrier and the Negro language barrier. All of those to me felt like things that were 10 years ago. We're making the same jokes. We're making it like it just doesn't feel like Madea is actually in 2022 is my point. Something's always off. And I think that's because Tyler Perry is clear that he hyper serves his audience and he's clear that his audience like what he like. You know, because that's what he put out and that's why he don't work with writers and that's why he do everything and film it in 10 days or whatever the case may be. I'm glad that they have that, but I'm glad that we also have other things as well.
Well, I mean, the way that Tyler Perry can film a 2-hour movie in 45 minutes has never made sense to me. And I just don't, I will never get that. But I didn't feel that way because, I mean, like, mentions of defund and that kind of thing. I was like, oh, okay. I just felt like it was the idea that we've done 12 of these movies and never had a gay character just felt bizarre to me.
Well, not an openly one, right? Because they always making homophobic jokes. They always calling somebody a tambourine player.
Yes, right. I mean, we've had a DL man with AIDS who gave HIV to the woman that he was sleeping with or some shit like that. We've had all kinds of, like, there's always
an air of queerness. Did we have that? What movie was that?
Remember, that was the one I Can Do Bad All By Myself, maybe?
No. Temptation. You talking about the Temptation with Brandy.
Sure.
And Lance Gross and Jeremy Smollett. Yes, I was going to say, I feel like Brandy's Kardashian.
Oh, Kim was in that movie. Listen. See, but like there's always an air of queerness that just like never gets addressed in a way that I feel like is appropriate. We've done a whole episode on this. You should go back and listen to that if you want more analysis on our feelings about Tyler Perry. But like, this movie, I was like, I know you fucking lying. There's some moments in the graduation scene where I was like, why does it look like VFX happened on someone's iPhone? Like, who shot that? Like, it was, there's a lot of moments where I was just like, what's happening?
Because he likes to save money.
Yeah, but he's also making a ton of it and should start doing better. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into, Jesus, this is like the episode of seemingly problematic Black men. Well, I don't know that Tyler Perry, well.
Right.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we're getting into the man, the myth, the mustache. I'm taking that
yes,
back, by the way.
Yes, reclaiming your time.
Steve Harvey, don't go anywhere.
You better reclaim your time, sis.
All right, the weather outside is real questionable from week to week. Right now, it could be chilly outside. It might be hot. But you can indulge all of your cozy dreams with Brooklinen's home goods that puts your comfort first. Brooklinen was created in 2014 to give customers luxury hotel-level home essentials that don't break the bank. By working directly with suppliers, Brooklinen cuts out the markups and passes those savings back to their customers. So you get their incredible products at a reasonable cost. You can also take Brooklinen's signature softness outside the home with their loungewear collection featuring the softest tees, tanks, sweatshirts, joggers, and other essential basics. I am sleeping on Brooklinen sheets right now. Well, not right now, but like this morning and again later tonight. But I am a big fan of Brooklinen from the sheets and the pillowcases. All of it is really fantastic. And you can be a part of that as well. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code FANTI for $20 off your purchase of $100 or more. That's brooklinen.com, brooklinen.com, and enter promo code FANTI for $20 off your purchase today. That's Brooklinen, the curators of comfort.
This episode is also brought to you by the folks over at Raycon. Now listen, we're already in March, and I know a lot of y'all didn't even make resolutions this year. And you know what? I get it. I understand. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't still find a way to shake things up, whether it's by switching up your workout routine if you're doing that gym thing, okay? Maybe you're going someplace new. I hear the girls are getting flued out these days. Whatever way you challenge yourself this new year, there's no better way to do it than with a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears, okay? Their everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. There's also this awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings so you can take Raycons with you wherever you go. You know, when you just put the earbuds in your ear just because you don't want to talk to nobody, but you want to listen in on the conversations that they have in because they be talking about you and stuff because they think you can't hear them. Listen, these Raycon earbuds are great for that. I'm speaking from experience. Right now, Fanti listeners, you can get 15% off your Raycon order at buyraycon.com/Fanti. That's buyraycon.com/Fanti to save 15% on your Raycons. buyraycon.com/Fanti.
Welcome back to Fanti. This week, we're taking a look at the omnipresent host with the most television gigs of anybody, the older, blacker, balder Ryan Seacrest, Steve Harvey. He's the host of the ABC shows Judge Steve Harvey and Celebrity Family Feud. No, I mean, it's a compliment. Ryan Seacrest kills it. And now Steve Harvey is too. He's the host of ABC shows Judge Steve Harvey and Celebrity Family Feud, the syndicated version of Family Feud, the Miss Universe pageant, the Steve Harvey Morning Show, and Facebook's Steve on Watch, and likely some other shit that I've forgotten or has been announced in the hours since we've recorded this episode. He's a world-renowned stand-up comic, film, and television producer, and the former face of an eponymous sitcom, and a figure that you'd have to work really hard not to see or hear or otherwise be aware of. And if you haven't, then congratulations. The thing is, Steve Harvey has always been a person that I've appreciated while I've not ever really felt like I could be at ease or comfortable when he's doing his thing. In recent years, it's become clear to me that it's because he reminds me so much of my dad. My therapist can talk to you about that another time if she wants to violate our covenant. So let's get into it with Steve. First things first, Travelle, what is your background with
Steve Harvey? I think my background is, you know, most black folks' background, which is like the Steve Harvey Show, the sitcom from back in the day. Shout out to Lovita Alizé Jenkins and Piggy Greer, okay?
Shout out to Shricken.
Not Shricken. And Romeo. Rest in peace, Romeo. And Lori Beth Denberg.
Oh, with Vital Information for Your Everyday Life?
Yes.
Okay.
The Steve Harvey sitcom from back in the day. And then obviously like the comedy, the kings of comedy probably being the most relevant present one for me. And then Suits. I have a story about Suits that we'll get to later, but let's just say for now, Suits.
Oh my God, me too.
And I used to love Family Feud, and then some things take a turn for me, you know, because I love a game show.
Well, okay, I will say that Steve Harvey for me was very much the same. Like, I loved the Steve Harvey Show. That was a fun thing when he was Mr. Hightower. The original Kings of Comedy is one of like the most iconic stand-up specials that I can think of that then spurred the Queens of Comedy, which is also really, really fantastic.
And better. Yeah, I said it.
I would dare say. I would dare say. I mean, when S'more comes out, listen, never mind.
That's back when Monique was still saying she hates skinny bitches. She was still saying skinny bitches are evil.
I mean, this is back when she was talking about wanting to stick her.
Uh-oh. My lord.
Never mind. Okay. But anyway, I've always been aware of mm-hmm. Steve Harvey. And I know this because when I was 15 years old, I worked at 98.1 KISS FM, Today's R&B and Classic Soul in San Francisco. And we had an event.
Was that supposed to be a different voice?
And like, I was walking. It's 98.1 KISS FM, Today's R&B and Classic Soul. It's not a different voice. It's just a tagline. Is that okay with you?
No, I'm just saying you said it in a particular way, and I think you meant for it to sound like you were on the radio, but I didn't hear a difference is what I'm
saying. No, I think you're being a bitch. I think that's what I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's what's happening. I'm pretty sure. But like, I remember the first time I saw Steve Harvey in person.
Yes.
I was going to an event that we were doing, and like, I was walking into this massive hotel, and like, he was walking out. And we made eye contact, and it was like a big black event. And so we made eye contact, and like, he looked at me and like nodded like, yes, it's me, but don't say nothing, because he didn't want people to like start coming up to him. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. And just like kept walking. Right. And so that was the coolest thing that had ever happened. Like, I was 14, aww, 15, and I went home and I told my dad, I was like, oh my God, I saw Steve Harvey. Like, it was a thing. Kind of getting into the fan here, because I feel like this kind of touches on that. I will always say, and I'm sure we said this about Tyler Perry as well, listen, we stand a successful black person who's dominating the culture, right? Like, always appreciate when a black person is able to come in and like run the table. And I feel like no one is hitting quite like Steve Harvey, right? Like, Ryan Seacrest was for a while, and you know, Ryan Seacrest is still present, and I mean, he's on the TV every morning. But like, I feel like Steve Harvey is having a very unique and special moment in the zeitgeist right now, where he is hosting so many different things. And Steve Harvey has more shows that have gone off the air than most people will ever have on the air, right? And so a lot of respect for how much work Steve Harvey has done and how, I would say, almost ubiquitous his name has become, right? I feel like everybody has a bit of a lens on who Steve Harvey is and is watching one of the things that he has done over the course of time. I appreciate like this big black family imagery that we get to see. I think I talked at some point about like, I remember when I was in college, the Obamas came into the White House and there was this photo of them on their family photo. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is like the new all-American family, right? And they're black. And that was like interesting to me because they were real, as opposed to like the Cosbys or something like that. And like, I feel like while Steve Harvey and his family are not that per se, I appreciate the image of like this big black family who's living this fabulous life. Like, it's entertaining to me. They're kind of exhausting sometimes, but I also just appreciate it. The last thing I will say kind of starts to touch on this suits thing that you, I don't know what your suit story is, but like, mm-hmm. I've talked about working at CNN back in the day. And when I worked at CNN, I was working on Black in America too. And we did this whole day with Steve Harvey. And we went to the Steve Harvey morning show that taped in Atlanta at the time. I think it might still tape there. But we spent the whole day with him. The only thing that was weird that day was we got a note that we could not make eye contact with Mr. Harvey. Everyone walks around, Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harvey. Oh, Mr. Harvey. And it was like,
what year is this?
This is like 2009-ish, maybe.
Okay.
Circa that time. And I remember thinking like, I know for sure that that note did not come from Steve Harvey. You mean to tell me a stand-up comic who has traveled the world with live audiences in front of him, you cannot make eye contact with him? That just doesn't make sense to me. Now, mind you, I also want to note, this is a note that plenty of people in proximity to other celebrities get, like, oh, please don't make eye contact with Miss Aniston or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that Jennifer Aniston is doing that. But I do remember him stopping me in the hallway or like addressing me as the well-dressed intern. And I thought, well, I won. Like, I don't know what else you need from me, but I won today because Steve Harvey, Mr. Suits, said that I was a well-dressed intern and I was happy.
I love that. My whole suit story. So, you know, y'all know I'm country. Okay.
No.
Shut up. Y'all know I'm country. And so back in the day, Steve Harvey, for those who don't know, don't remember, Steve Harvey, as you just said, was Mr. Suit, right? He had a particular unique style.
Yes.
That everybody tried to emulate, okay? And it was
people.
Super, well, yes, black people. But this is for the nignogs, okay?
We haven't said that in a long time.
It was this boxy moment, like, you know, these over big shoulders that went straight down. Okay. It was just super rectangular is what it was given. And then you had to like be particular because you wanted the color of your pinstripe to match the color of the tie, to match the shoes, right? And the shoes always had to be like Stacy Adams, like, you know, this alligator print moment, you know, snakeskin print moment. And I went to prom in my version of a Steve Harvey suit in high school. It's this brown and gold snakeskin boxy ass suit, okay, with a matching tie and matching Stacy Adams, these like two-tone brown Stacy Adams gaiters. Baby, listen, and I had a little hat. Now, the hat was a little bit, it was an overkill. The hat was overkill.
Oh, okay, let me pause you. I didn't want to interrupt this story, but Swish is in agreement with me. We need the photo.
Oh, no.
We need the photo. I'm just going to say
it. Oh, no. Like, and then my adult version of that, when I got rid of the jacket, I kept the vest. My adult version of that is I would wear the same button down with the cufflinks, the same tie, and the vest, and I just put jeans on.
Ooh, that was my how you know. Edgy.
I know,
how
right?
Young.
Listen, so fresh, okay? For us, by us, you could never. Anyway, so I say that to say, Steve Harvey was and always has been like a fashion icon in that unique, specifically black type of way. And even his style now, he's currently on the cover of Paper Magazine, I believe it is. Michael B. Jordan did the interview, but they're talking about his style. And he says that, you know, his wife Marjorie was like, okay, it's time to freshen this up a bit. And so he talks about the stylist who he hired, right? Who still has that same Steve Harvey fashion sensibility, but like it's a little bit more tailored. It's a little bit more reflective of the times. And so for me, when I think about the stuff that I like about Steve Harvey, it's about the clothes. Okay, it's not even really the comedy, if I'm being honest. It's about the clothes. It's about the sartorial excellence on display.
You really wanted to say sartorial, didn't you?
Listen, baby, okay? Now, I will admit, I didn't actually think of it in advance. It literally just slid into my head. But as soon as it slid in, I said, you got to get this out now before you forget. Okay? And so I had to slide it in. But that's for me. Where kind of the good stuff, especially with a lot of the anti stuff that I want to jump into right now. Okay, here's the thing. Let's first start at act like a lady, think like a man. We really, and I just say we, this is the royal we, not we including me.
Or me, no team.
Okay, so y'all really let this man go around talking about he was a relationship expert.
Based on what? Let's put a pin right there. Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man as a book is the thing that changed Steve Harvey's career. Like, Steve Harvey was already a big star, but his star was kind of like going back down, right? Mm. And then he wrote that book, and that book catapulted him. That was what got him
you
on Good Morning
so?
America. Oh, absolutely, it did. And like, wow. He's talked about this before. That book changed the trajectory of like where he was going because that book then became a film. That film became a second film, which became Family Feud, which became like all of this other stuff, right? That book, problematic as it is, right, really changed things for him.
But we was really going around here. Hell, some people would say still going around here, calling this man a relationship expert. Did you know that he co-founded a dating website called Delightful.com, where the goal of the site was to make you a better dater? Like, something's wrong with you. You come to this site, you'll get advice from me, Steve Harvey, about how to be a better, you know, better partner or whatever. His title, he was the chief love officer, was his title.
I'm throwing up in my mouth just a little bit. Excuse me.
That's why you got to have some water on the side, honey.
What this says to me is someone approached him and said, so listen, we would love to put you in on this thing. And he said yes to it. I cannot believe that he came up with something called Delightful.com. That just does not even sound on brand to me.
I'm sure he didn't, but still.
Yeah. The idea of Steve Harvey as a love, sex, and relationships like expert just never, again, curled all the way over for me.
Now he was trying to be Carrie Bradshaw.
Well, was she an expert? Well, I guess she was, yeah.
What you mean, like, she on the podcast talking about love and sex and stir?
Well, she's giving advice on the podcast. But I'm thinking her column back in the day was more of like her tales of sex in
the city.
You see what I did there. But yeah, the idea of Steve being a love and relationships person just never hit for me, because I was like, the advice that he was giving was always telling women what they needed to do to get a man. And it really kind of brings me into what my challenge here, right? And I don't know that I've ever really framed an anti in this way, but really all of my issues with Steve Harvey really stem from one feeling, if you will, right? He's always felt like he was towing the line of homophobia and misogyny. I don't know that he's, I mean, I know that with the relationship stuff, like, there's a lot of ways that we can address the misogyny in that, right? I don't know how much he's, like, crossing the line of homophobia and misogyny, but he's always, like, leaning up against the line.
You think he double dutching on that motherfucker?
Double dutching on it. Like, he fell asleep and might have rolled over it and came back over. You know what I mean? Like, he farted over the line and, like, really fucked it up over here. Like, there's a lot of moments where he's just, like, really in that blurry, murky area of homophobia. And I want to use this example because I feel like it really kind of touches on exactly what I'm talking about, right? This is a bit of a long clip that we're going to play, and we're going to put the link into the notes. If you haven't seen it, it's a really great... It has a lot of funny moments in it, but there's some challenges here. Recently on Celebrity Family Feud, RuPaul's Drag Race was represented on the show, and they had cast members...
Well, this was a while ago. This wasn't new.
This was in the last couple of years.
Okay, that's what you mean by recently. That's a big old range for recently, my love.
You done?
I'm just saying, recently is like last week.
Let me know.
Not 3 years, not pre-pandemic.
You know what? I'm not doing this with you. Today, shout out to Whitney Houston, a callback. This was in June of 2020, according to the Family Feud YouTube channel. So within the last couple of years. So shut the fuck up.
Recently.
The cast members on the panel in this order were RuPaul, Michelle Visage, Carson Kressley, and Queens Latrice Royale and Raven, right? The question is, the real headline on the video is that RuPaul got the number one answer on the question without even hearing the full question and made up the end of the question and got it right. And so the question itself was, name a way a woman can flirt with a man without making physical contact. And so Latrice is the fourth person in the line. Again, it's RuPaul, Michelle Visage, Carson Kressley, and then Latrice. Latrice Royale, for those of you who do not know, is a very tall...
icon. Legendary.
Right. A tall man in drag, right? In heels, enormous wig, giving us 200-300% density, right? Like, gorgeous. And answers the question, again, name a way a woman can flirt with a man without making physical contact, with maybe showing a little bit of leg, right? Raven, who is standing next to Latrice, steps out, shows a little leg from the red gown that she has on. And, like, the crowd is, like, erupting into, like, oh, you know, all of this stuff. And then Steve Harvey kind of has, like, this look on his face, like he doesn't know what to do. right? Like, like he's uncomfortable. The clip picks up from there.
I want to go home. I'm not gonna survive this. I'm not gonna survive this. This could be my last time hosting, folks. Because this right here is getting more dangerous as it goes down. Like, RuPaul's actually like really cool. And then, like, this is like wonderful. And then it just starts diving. Because this damn Carson is ignorant in real life.
What?
And then Latrice Royale, look at me. That tightened everything in me up. Okay, what was your answer?
Short little leg.
Short.
That's a good answer.
So Latrice goes on to the answer, you know, is given. And like, there's more moments where Steve is talking about, is asking like, how long have you been a queen? And Latrice talks about, oh, I've been doing this for 28 years, but I'm only 29. And like, Steve says, you know, because of political correctness, I believe you, with like a fake smile on his face. Some of what I'll call his discomfort with Rue and Carson and Latrice and Raven, I'm leaving out Michelle because he doesn't seem to have a challenge with her. But his feeling of uncomfortability doesn't really seem to make sense because he also says that he has some kind of familiarity with Rue and Carson, but also acts like he's uncomfortable with them.
Well, familiarity don't mean he know them, but don't mean any friends.
Well, fair. He often demonstrates how uncomfortable he is by his facial expressions, which is why I'm saying you should go and watch the clip. He walks away from them. He makes all kinds of jokes. And if you watch the clip, Rue and Michelle sometimes kind of have this painted like smile on their faces and what looks like them trying to laugh off some moments that feel like they're really towing that line of homophobia. And it just, it makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm like, you didn't have to do that way, right? And like the entire episode or the entire 12 minutes of that segment, he's like doing this thing, right? And it feels like our old dads, grandfathers, uncles, whatever, who don't really fuck with you, but like are trying to act like they do. And I want to acknowledge like some of that is my shit. And I get that, but that's why it makes me feel uncomfortable because I feel like Steve is just like, it's not necessary and it feels outdated. And like for someone who has become so ubiquitous in culture right now, it's like, nigga, grow up. Like, come on.
You know, it definitely gives black uncle who secretly voted for Trump.
Ooh.
There's a skosh of that in the mix.
I didn't think that, but I get why you say that.
I don't think you're necessarily wrong. We're pulling on a few different stereotypes here.
How about it? Okay.
But it does give that energy, that uncle, that person in the family that y'all just really don't fuck with. That, you know, you see them at the cookout, but you don't really You wave from afar, you do a little head nod to pay respect, but like we ain't going too far type of thing. It definitely gives that. But, you know, one of the things interesting in that clip, the larger clip of what you just played, he does a lot of like towing of stuff in which he's like, oh, I would say something, but like I got to be politically correct. Or I believe whatever you said because I got to be politically correct. And that reminds me of this interview he did earlier this year when he was like promoting the new show Judge Harvey. And he was commenting on, I guess the reporter had asked him, like, would he ever like return to stand up? Would he ever do another special? And he's, you know, as black men, black comedians of a certain age and generation have been saying for some time, to my demise and dismay, he says that cancel culture, quote unquote, has killed comedy, that politically correctness has killed comedy because somebody always getting their feelings hurt. And that if you are a comedian that is sponsor driven, he says, like himself, like Chris Rock, like Kevin Hart, you have to be politically correct. And if you are a comedian who is subscriber driven, like Dave Chappelle, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
I get why he would feel that way.
I think that too. And it's some bullshit.
Oh, I don't think it's some bullshit.
This is, you, 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 You don't think. So wait. So you want you believe cancel culture is a thing?
Okay, so that was a leap because I did not. The
assertion rests on the foundation of his belief that cancel culture has fucked up comedy.
Well, if you are Steve Harvey, think about the specific moment that we just talked about, right?
But I'm not Steve Harvey.
Thank you for clearing that up.
To be clear, I'm not saying that I do not understand how he could say that. I do understand how he can say that. What I'm saying is the saying of it is some bullshit.
I mean, that's because it doesn't affect you, right? Like, you're not the person
but
who
actually,
would be harmed
by... But that's a lie. It does affect me.
The things that he would probably be saying if he was subscriber-driven as opposed to sponsor-driven would probably have a very direct impact on queer and trans people, right? Because if we're looking at what that moment specifically when we said that he was talking about wanting to be politically correct because of being sponsor-driven, right?
Mm-hmm.
Steve Harvey, if he was to say whatever that thing was, right, that was in his mind to say, he would lose his sponsors probably, right? People would be on Twitter and being like, fuck this, no. I don't know that it would be him being canceled. Steve would probably find himself moving to like a more subscriber-based kind of thing, right? But Steve Harvey is on two ABC shows, a syndicated show that goes around the world, a syndicated sponsored morning show that is on radio stations all over this country. And so if he starts coming out and saying things that are overtly homophobic as opposed to like veiled homophobia or transphobia or whatever obiaism that would be represented by some of the things he might want to say, if he were coming out and saying those things, he would lose those opportunities, right?
I actually don't think he would. I think that we have seen time and time again how people have not lost, or if they have lost, they have rebounded so much well that whatever loss there was is a net zero.
Well, absolutely. But like if we're thinking about the statement that he made, right, about being sponsor driven versus subscriber driven, which I think is a really interesting dynamic that we could have like a whole other conversation on. But like his sponsors would probably walk away from him, or some of them would.
And others would come.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. He would probably have to move from like a sponsor model to a subscriber model, right, where people are paying to see him.
But here's the difference. The difference is what I'm saying is that we've seen example after example after example of example who haven't had to switch the approach, who haven't had to switch that model in the way that you said that he might have to do, right? Who are still making their bread and butter doing the same thing that they were doing before. And I'm not talking about Dave Chappelle, to be clear, right? Because I agree right. that he is that subscriber model. But the point I am making ultimately, because we need to go, is that my contentions with Steve Harvey are rooted in this respectable-esque, old, tired sensibility that ultimately is problematic or creates issues for folks who look like me.
Absolutely. I 100% believe that, like, Steve Harvey, after a couple of drinks in a place far away from cameras and microphones that are connected to press, right?
And a Valium. What did Roseanne say she was on?
Okay.
Acetaminophen.
Valerie Jarrett just sat up somewhere and said, now why am I in it? But like, I think that Steve Harvey probably has some really problematic shit to say when he's sitting around with Dave Chappelle, right? Like, about all kinds of, you know, faggots and trans people, like all kinds of things that he would probably want to say, right? But I do think that he is right about what he is saying, no matter how challenging, problematic, or otherwise it may be. I do want to get to this last moment, though, that you have here.
I don't think he's right.
Okay.
So a number of years ago, pre-pandemic, oh my God, so long ago, there was this memo. When he had his talk show, I think it was the fifth season of his talk show, he sent out this memo at the start of the talk show about these new rules that he was instituting for how the staff should or should not interact with him or speak to him. And here's, I'm going to read part of the letter. I'd like you all to review and adhere to the following notes and rules for season 5 of my talk show. There will be no meetings in my dressing room, no stopping by or popping in. No one, all caps. Do not come to my dressing room unless invited. Do not open my dressing room door, all caps. If you open my door, expect to be removed. My security team will stop everyone from standing at my door who have the intent to see or speak to me. I want all the ambushing to stop now. That includes TV staff. You must schedule an appointment. I have been taken advantage of by my lenient policy in the past. This ends now, all caps. No more. Do not approach me while I'm in the makeup chair unless I ask to speak with you directly, either knock or use the doorbell. I am seeking more free time for me throughout the day. Do not wait in any hallway to speak to me. I hate being ambushed. Please make an appointment. I promise you I will not entertain you in the hallway, and do not attempt to walk with me. If you're reading this, yes, I mean you. Everyone, do not take offense to the new way of doing business. It is for the good of my personal life and enjoyment. Thank you all. Steve Harvey.
It's the subtlety for me. It's so indirect. Okay, wait. So this situation, do you understand any of this? Is this all problematic? Like, how do you feel about this?
I think that this, if my boss sent me this, I would start looking for a new job.
So as someone who has worked on a talk show, as a staffer, it's very aggressive. Too aggressive. Right?
There are other ways. Yes, there are other ways aggressive. To say that, like, we want to change how you do these things. That this wasn't necessary, is my point.
I get that. As a staffer, I would be irritated about this. Also, as a person who has been, like, talent in various different kinds of ways, and by no stretch of the imagination on this level of fame, I can imagine how many people are walking up to him on any given day wanting his time.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
I get the sentiment of this. I just wouldn't have ever written this and sent it out to staff. Right? It would have been more of a communication of like, y'all, stop going up to Steve, Mr. Harvey, right? In the hallway or like walking into his dressing room. The idea of like, being that level of famous and having people have that much access to you when you're sitting in the chair before you have to go perform, I get.
Listen.
This letter is completely too much.
Listen, being under the pressures that come with visibility do not give you an excuse to be an asshole.
Again.
And that's all. That,
I
and that's
get
where it
the
ends.
Sentiment.
And that's where it ends.
But this letter to that's me was too ends. Much.
I can't even consider the sentiment because you being an asshole.
I mean, well, there's that. We want to know what y'all think about this. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we've got an Ask Fanti and our listener feedback and dishonorable mentions. We will be right back.
Well, Manolo, we have a show to promote. It's called Dr. Game Show.
It's a family-friendly podcast where listeners submit games and we play them with callers from around the world.
Oh, sounds good. New episodes happen every other Wednesday on MaximumFun.org.
It's a fast and loose oasis of absurd innocence and naivete.
Are you writing a poem?
No, and just saying things from my memory. And it's a nice break from reality. Are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. It sounds bad.
It comes with a 100% happiness guarantee.
It does not. Come for the games and stay for the chaos.
Hi, I'm looking for a movie.
Oh, I gotcha.
There's that new foreign film with the time travel.
There's an amazing documentary about queer history on streaming.
Have I told you about this classic where giant robots fight?
Or there's that one that most critics hated, but I thought was actually pretty good.
Ooh, I know. The one with the huge car chase, and then there's that scene where...
The car jumps over the submarine.
Wow, who are you eclectic movie experts?
Well, I'm Ivy Wadiway.
I'm Drea Clark.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi. And together, we host the movie podcast, Maximum Film.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
And you actually just walked into our recording booth.
Oh, weird. Sorry. I thought this was a video store.
You seem like a lady with a lot of problems.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We are going to get into an Ask Fantas. This is when you can submit some of your questions, your burning issues. And you heard of Judge Steve Harvey. Now you got Judge Travell Anderson and Jarrett Hill. Judge J.N.T.
I've been trying to get us on Judge John Hodgman as guest judges because I do think the idea of Judge Steve Harvey is hysterical. I don't need to watch it, but I get why it would be a hit. But go ahead.
Okay, so we have an Ask Fantai from a listener. We're going to call her LaFred, okay? LaFred says, I am the content marketing manager for a growing alcohol brand and the only Black person in the entire corporate office. So, can imagine, I'm always the quote-unquote voice of the people when it comes to marketing decisions. Every month, I review the upcoming social media copy, which is always written by our white digital marketing manager. Shocker, she is a fan of AAVE and Black slang. My comments on her copy have grown in intensity month by month. I don't know how many times I have to tell her, pour one out means someone died. I've even been blunt and said it's offensive to use AAVE to try to sell our products, and she pretty much didn't give a shit. What would you do next? Everybody with power is white or a POC who is prejudiced against Black people. Please help.
I had someone just tell me that they were the first Black person to have like a staff role at like a legacy journalism institution. And like, it told me everything I needed to know about the culture of where they worked, right? I feel like I get a lot of everything that you're feeling at this job simply by knowing that you are the only Black person working in this company. So I get that. I hear you. I feel you, sis. I would say that you need to consider asking for a diversity, equity, and inclusion training.
No, girl. You need to leave.
To cuss these motherfuckers out.
No, you need to leave. And I know I'm not saying you can leave today. I'm not saying you can leave tomorrow. But you need to find other employment opportunities where you are not subjected to that foolishness, let alone all the other microaggressions and macroaggressions and aggressive fucking aggressions that you might be dealing with being the only Black person there.
I would say if leaving is an option, girl, go, right? You don't have to be the savior of this company. Let them put their foot in their mouth. If quitting is not an option for you, y'all need to have some serious training about diversity, equity, and inclusion and the ways that the problem Asia is showing up.
Girl.
I would say you can go to jarretthill.com and send us an email. I would happily come and talk to your company.
They ain't gonna pay you to come. You wanna know why I know? You wanna know why I know they ain't gonna pay you to come?
Because they're already prejudiced against Black people. Please help.
Big purr.
I mean, like, I totally get that. But like, you need to be having some conversation with the higher ups about the experience that you're having there and letting them know how problematic it is. Mm-mm. If leaving is not an option.
Mm-mm. Sis.
Because everybody can't quit their job, sis.
No, I'm not saying. I didn't tell her to quit today. What I said.
You said leave.
I literally said maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but you need to be making steps to leave. And I still stand by that because, right, you want her to go to the white bosses and say that everybody else at this company is making this a shit show for me. And you expect that to potentially end well for her? See, what I'm saying, there are two different steps, sis, here. You can go Jared route, and that could work for you, and that could be great, and you could see the changes and the shifts in the environment in the ways that you want. You could do that, right? And they're going to call you all kinds of nignogs and stuff behind your back as they do it, right?
Or, if they start calling you a nignog, honey, it's time to take off an earring and get it popping.
Or, and not even or as in these are the only two options. There are plenty of options. Or you can begin taking the steps necessary to be able to find a job that won't treat you this way and treat your people and your culture this way.
Absolutely.
That could take 6 months to happen, which is fine. But like, doing the necessary preparations to get out of there, while yes, if you want, trying to transform that place while you are still there, go for it. But I'm done telling people to, you know, stick it in and try to change the culture. God damn it. because then your ass be tired. Tired and underpaid.
I fully understand why you say that. And like, I don't even disagree. I think that everyone can't do that. And so for the people that have to like stay in their job, or for people that want to stay in their job, right? Like who like the job itself, but are really challenged by the ways that people are assholes and racist and whatever. Like, in, especially in this moment where like Black people, brown people, queer, trans people, like marginalized communities are able to have more of a voice in the place that they work, you definitely have the opportunity to speak up and say, this is a problem. And I mean, if they don't do anything about it, sue they fucking asses. Now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories of people that have caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. First things first, I want to give an honorable mention to the people of Ukraine, even more specifically, the Black and African communities there in Ukraine that are not getting treated with the same care and attention as they are trying to survive and in some cases leave the country. I just want to, I don't know if you've seen the social media videos over the course of the last week and some change, but like the situations that, you know, the Black folks specifically in Ukraine are experiencing, really frustrating to watch and see. But it is a reminder that anti-Blackness exists everywhere. Secondly, I want to give a dishonorable mention to Republicans left and right, who are the only people you can find in the world, really, who are like actively going after supporting Vladimir Putin. And, you know, backing this Vladimir Putin kind of movement that has happened. I mean, not movement into Russia, I mean, into Ukraine. And I just think that Republicans are being really, really fucking gross and like showing up and speaking at white supremacist events this past week and white nationalists and then not. And then the other Republicans not denouncing it. But like, we've also seen that before. Finally, I want to give an honorable mention to a friend of mine named David Day, who passed away over this past weekend on one of our past episodes. In our Black History is Happening Every Day, we did a shout out to Here's Where I Stand and that song from Camp. And I learned of that song from David Day. David is a friend of mine from college and we were a part of a friend group. And David introduced me to that song as a dancer. He had choreographed this beautiful piece to it. And that was the moment that inspired me to come out to my family. And so David had a real impact on my life and is someone that I loved and appreciated and is now gone. So I just wanted to shout out David and send him and his family all the love right now. So there's that. You want to make a hard left turn here, Travell?
My God, have mercy on my soul.
Go ahead.
Wow. Ooh, Jesus. Okay. Ooh. Okay, my God. All right. Okay, so I want to give an honorable mention to the journalists over at Jezebel, The Root, Gizmodo, Lifehacker, and other Go Media newsrooms that are currently on strike. Okay, shout out to the unions. Okay, y'all better get that fair pay. Okay, get that good contract. How you doing? And so for those of you who are out there listening, if you ways to support folks in these types of efforts are to not click on those articles, to not visit that site as they are doing it. If you care, maybe you don't. And then I am doing a dishonorable mention going out to the Texas Governor Greg Abbott, as well as all of the other other members of the anti-trans hate machine that is out there. I tweeted this the other day that, like, you know, I feel like so much of our focus is on Ukraine and what's going on there, and it very much so should be. But I'm hoping that we can walk and chew gum at the same time so that, you know, we can also put some attention on all of the anti-trans bills and policies that are being put out there, including this foolishness that Greg Abbott has done, in which he has instructed his government people to investigate, to launch investigations against parents who support their trans kids, and to block trans-affirming health care that folks need. And so almost 40 states are considering or have passed anti-trans bills. In case you don't know, there's 50 states in total. Okay. So what's that? a lot of percentage. 80%? 80%.
Yes.
80% of the country is living in a state that is considering and debating anti-trans legislation. So listen, there's plenty of opportunities for you to get involved. You know, you got a little extra income. Slide it the way of a trans-led organization that's doing work. Send it to the folks over at the ACLU who are, you know, fighting all of these things, attempting to fight all of these things in the courts and whatnot. There's a lot going on out there, people. And hopefully you are getting involved to ensure that a lot of these political officials aren't sowing hate into our legislation in your name. Because all of you white women who are out there, they're doing it in your name.
How about that?
All right, it's time for
Black History is happening every day.
This week on Black History is happening every day, I'm going to give it to a woman by the name of Dr. Patricia Bath. She was an ophthalmologist and laser scientist who was an innovative research individual and advocate for blindness prevention, treatment, and cure. Her accomplishments included the invention of a new device and technique for cataract surgery known as laser phaco. There I go messing up stuff. This is why I'm not in medical school. The creation of a new discipline known as community ophthalmology and the appointment as the first woman chair of the ophthalmology in the United States at UCLA back in 1983. She died in 2019, but so much of the credit for those of you out there doing laser eye therapy stuff apparently goes back to a Black woman.
Doesn't it always?
Listen, Black women, my God.
Black women, my God.
Before we get out of here, a couple quick plugs. Again, I'm on Pop Culture Happy Hour this week talking a Madea homecoming. I'm also going to be a guest on Maximum Film, which is Maximum Fun's film review discussion podcast, joining Iffy. I'm not even going to mess up Iffy's last name. Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo. It's more Madea talk, but also, you know, you get some movie recommendations and whatnot as well.
If this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this here.
Good.
Oh, okay. Check out other episodes that have a related
Count Chocula
conversation. Episode 6, Tyler Perry and the MCU. Madea Cinematic Universe, again, a phrase that was
which Travell firmly believes that Travell coined.
Black woman that we that we try to throw respect at around here from time to time. Also,
I could be wrong.
Oh no, don't walk it back now.
You always got to give yourself a little wiggle room.
Also, before we're done here, I want to shout out Taylor, who is a listener of the show, who was a camper of mine back in the day. As you did that voice, it made me think about the Dipsy ads that we've been doing. And Taylor was a camper of mine 15 years ago who texted me this past week and said, you know that feeling you get when you're watching a movie with your parents and a sex scene comes on? That's the feeling I get when you do Dipsy ads.
Oh my God.
That took me clean out. Shout out to Taylor. All right. If you're a listener and you're on Apple Podcasts, we thank you so much for listening. Number one, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you got a few options. You can hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at FantiPodcast and make sure to use the hashtag FantiFam, or you can shoot us an email, fanti@maximumfun.org.
And as always, if you'd like to become a financially contributing member of the Maximum Fun family, you can do that at MaximumFun.org/join. That's how you can contribute directly to this fabulous show that you're listening to. And you can join our monthly Fanti Friday Salon for members only. Our music is brought to you every week by the one and only Corece. That's Core.ece. Make sure you're streaming his latest single, Possibly Impossible. Our graphics are brought to you by the wonderful folks over at Moonhouse Creative, led by Ashley Wen. Our social media video is being done by Melba Martinez.
Our producers are Laura Swisher. Bah, 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 bah. And we are edited by Will Hagel. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Did I say Lori Death? Lori Beth.
You probably did. That sounds about you.
My God. Anyway,